Today I want to talk about a particular problem facing scientific realism, a view about science and about metaphysics and about how science and metaphysics relate to one another. And in particular, I want to discuss a suggestion. I'll come back to what that problem is. I want to discuss a suggestion on how to solve that problem put forth by Anjan Chakravarty in his book, I think it's called A Metaphysics for Scientific Realism. And in that book, the suggestion was put forth a bit mutely, I must say, but in later text that I have come across. I'm not really sure if it's published yet or not. I just have it in a kind of manuscript form, which is called Scientific Realism and Ontological Relativity. This suggestion is even further spelled out. I will suggest that Chakravarty's solution to this problem fails to give him what he needs for basically the same reasons that caused the problem to begin with. And to see this, I need to take a closer look at the intricate question concerning what a scientific realism really should be taken to entail, and more precisely, what it can be taken to entail metaphysically, but also, and I think importantly, what it should be taken to entail metaphysically. This means that in this talk I will leave my comfort zone philosophically because in my comfort zone I deal with metaphysics and metaphysics alone and not so much with how to get there, you know, whether via science or any other means. So and also it means that I now have to discuss issues that are very close, at least, to my comfort zone, issues in metaphysics and issues in meta-metaphysics concerning how to justify your ontological conclusions, from the perspective of a discussion that has been that you can find within the realm of metaphysics of science. And interestingly enough, I find, at least, that although what you say when you are discussing in the metaphysics of science zone sounds very similar to what you say when you're discussing among pure metaphysicians, I'm suspecting that maybe there can be some misunderstandings along the way, because sometimes it seems that we are discussing very closely but at the same time differently. So with that being said, I want you to, although I will claim things and as I normally do, it will sound as if I'm completely convinced of everything I say, I'm not, and I'm quite willing to receive any comments and criticisms. So, what is scientific realism? Why not ask, you know, the expert? And this is what he has to say. He says, or rather, I should say that this is not perhaps just what scientific realism is. It's the metaphysical part of scientific realism, or Stasis Psilos calls the metaphysical stance. According to him, this stance asserts that the world has a definite and mind-independent natural kind structure, and this thesis is a basic philosophical presupposition of scientific realism. It is meant to make scientific realism distinct from all those anti-realist accounts of science, which reduce the particles and the content of the world to whatever gets licensed by a set of epistemic practices and conditions. In particular, the metaphysical stance implies that if the unobservable natural kinds posited by theories exist at all, they exist independently of humans' ability to know, verify, recognize that they do. Instead of projecting a structure onto the world, scientific theories and scientific theorizing in general discovers and maps out an already structured and mind-independent world. This metaphysical thesis is prerequisite to any meaningful defense of scientific realism. So this is very interesting, I think. And as far as I can see, and what I want to discuss is this entire thesis, more or less, but in particular the highlighted part. So the claim on the part of the scientific realist that the world has a definite and mind-independent natural kind structure, and the claim on the part of science, as far as I understand, that instead of projecting a structure onto the world, scientific theories and scientific theorizing in general discovers and maps out an already structured and mind-independent world. Just a detour. Scientific realism, as far as I understand it, is presented as the solution to two sorts of problems coming from two entirely different directions. One is a problem for metaphysics, and the other is a problem for science. The problem for science can be spelled out in many different ways, but one way is this. We can ask about science in general, or our most successful sciences, or our best sciences, how it can be that these sciences or science has been and continues to be so successful. And scientific realism answers that question by saying it's because science reveals things about a mind-independent reality, like a constant. It's out there. Through science, we can get to that mind-independent reality. And of course, once we have revealed something about mind-independent reality, which has, as the term says, nothing to do with our minds or us, it's there for all to continue to build new theories on, etc., etc. I will not discuss, this is not a talk about metaphysics of scientific realism from the perspective of science in this sense. It's a talk about the role that scientific realism is supposed to play in relation to a problem for metaphysics. So in metaphysics, all who do work in metaphysics are all too well aware of the fact that the claims you make are easily questioned. Because as soon as you argue that there is a mind-independent reality and that our only way of getting to mind-independent reality is through our conceptions and thoughts and perceptions of it, and given our knowledge that the way we think and see and touch reality is influenced not only by the way reality is, but by a number of other things, including our concepts, etc. We know that the question will always arise at some point. So how can you justify the conclusions you've just made? Because how can you say that given the evidence that this is how mind-independent reality is? How can you say that you have not been fooled by appearances? Why? How can you say that what you take to be evidence of how mind-independent reality is fundamentally constructed is not evidence for how we choose for different reasons other than how reality actually is, to conceptualize reality that we see around us? And a very common route among contemporary metaphysicians today is to say that, okay, there is this problem, of course, so we accept that, but there are some parts of appearances that are especially well-grounded, that seem especially apt to inform us about at least some aspects of mind-independent reality, and that's mature science or our best sciences and so on. And this is also an attitude that you find reflected in amongst scientific realists. So to the question, on what grounds can we justifiably make metaphysical or ontological claims about mind-independent reality, the answer is on scientific grounds, or at least on parts of science at least, can inform us in this and that way about mind-independent reality. So this is the idea. I couldn't resist bringing this picture. This is my family, 1979, in Paris. This is why it's so nice. I'm to the right there, the blonde. So the idea is that here we are, trapped in, you know, our conceptual systems and our perceptual systems and all our flawlessness. Not flawlessness, but flawness. I don't know. I don't know English. And there's mind-independent reality that we want to know stuff about. And here's the window provided by science. So science is the window to mind-independent reality. This is the basic idea of scientific realism. And it's an idea that many metaphysicians today gladly embrace, because they have been looking for some window into mind-independent reality that seems to have especially good credentials. And this is obviously true of science, at least of some sciences. Now, I don't want to discuss this claim in general. I want to discuss another claim or another question which is related to this window to mind-independent reality question. And it has to do with the fact that even if we go to our best sciences, it is clear, and it is definitely clear to scientific realists, that not everything about scientific theories correctly or mirrors mind-independent reality. It's not like a completely clean window to reality. We can't just look through our scientific theories and everything you find in the theories you will find in mind-independent reality, because some parts of theories are there for other reasons than to describe and map out mind-independent reality. So which parts of science inform us about mind-independent reality? And as we've seen, one way of understanding the quote from Psyllos, which I don't think is the only way, but that is a way that many scientific realists have understood scientific realism, is that apart from claiming that the world has one unique mind-independent structure, the scientific realism is also the claim that scientific theories can provide us with information about that structure. Perhaps not about everything about mind-independent reality, but about that structure. And even more strongly put, it can provide us with information about the mind-independent natural kind structure by telling us which natural kinds there are, so giving us a taxonomy of the world. So this is what science does. It tells us which kinds of things there are. This is what looking through the window of science to mind-independent reality can give us. It can give us a list of the kinds of things there are, and I guess also about how they kind of relate to one another, at least to some extent. Now, note that these two claims of scientific realism need not be understood that strongly, because of course, and I'll come back to that, you may very well say that the world has one unique mind-independent structure, and you may say that scientific theories discover and map out the structure of mind-independent reality without claiming that the natural kind systems that you find in natural science are the systems that actually map out the structure of mind-independent reality. But I'll come back to that later. What I will call this view, because now I will assume that what I would call taxonomic monism is the view that our sciences can inform us about the unique mind-independent structure of reality. Now, there's a problem with this. And now, this is a problem both when it comes to actual practice in some parts of science, but it's also a problem, like, in principle, for that view. And the problem is this. If you look to the sciences, like for instance to biology, you find that in that same field of scientific field, different and mutually incompatible taxonomies exist and are very fruitful. And by mutually incompatible, I mean such that all of these different taxonomies could not all map out the structure of mind-independent reality, because then mind-independent reality would be contradictory, which we certainly hope it isn't. And not to mention, of course, different parts of science have different ways of classifying reality and different taxonomic systems. And it's not clear, again, how these relate to one another. So how does this square with the claim that the scientific realist, that is a taxonomic monist, makes, that science can tell us, can inform us about this unique mind-independent structure of reality? Now, there are some ways out that you might may come to think of, and one is, of course, reductionism. First of all, it's not clear that there is any great prospect of reducing different taxonomic systems, either between different parts of science or inside, like for instance biology, to one another. But even if one could, in principle, do this, it seems clear, and then the idea is that the reduction base will be physics and or chemistry, then it seems clear that there is nothing in principle to stop us from assuming that it's at least possible that physics and chemistry could also be amenable to distinct and mutually incompatible, in the here relevant sense, taxonomies. So even if reductionism were to be carried out successfully, this would not necessarily help to avoid this suspicion we have that perhaps the taxonomy we are given by our best science, or perhaps physics, the best of them all, perhaps it doesn't really provide us with the window we need. That's one way to go, but that's a problem. The other way to go is to, if we go back to this picture, is to simply say that a taxonomic monism is a taxonomic monism about mind-independent reality. What the basic assumption of scientific realism is that mind-independent reality has one unique mind-independent structure. And this is actually not very controversial, because as I was saying, in a sense, and I will come back to this as well, that now suppose that mind-independent reality is like a blob with no structure at all, that is actually one unique structure, then suppose it is a blob. Of course, we could come in and, in principle, cut up this blob with our conceptions in many different ways. But still, the structure of mind-independent reality would be one and unique, namely the blobby structure, or whatever structure mind-independent reality might have. If it didn't have one unique mind-independent structure, I don't know how to understand mind-independent reality. I don't know what that would mean for mind-independent reality to have more than one structure. So, now, one could understand scientific realism and taxonomic monism as the claim that mind-independent reality has one unique mind-independent structure, and that scientific theories discover and map out this structure, but that they do it in incomplete ways, that they focus on different aspects of this mind-independent reality. They take the blob and they cut it up in different ways. So that monism has to do with mind-independent reality. It doesn't have to do with how many taxonomies you can come up with from science. So this is, of course, one possibility. And this is, I think, the same as saying so much the worse for science. Because if you claim that taxonomic monism applies to both the scientific end of things and to mind-independent reality, then you get into trouble with these kinds of situations, and you get into trouble in principle. So what you should take away from this, someone might claim, is that you cannot glean information about mind-independent reality by looking at and taking into account the many taxonomic systems that science provides. Taxonomy is not what informs you about mind-independent reality. Taxonomy is not the window to mind-independent reality. Now, unless you add to that answer some information about what is the window to mind-independent reality, to say this is the same as giving up on scientific realism. Because one of the main ideas with scientific realism, of course, is that science does inform you about mind-independent reality, and that it does so in a dependable way, and justifiable way. So, can you eat your cake and have it too? That is, can you claim that through a study of the taxonomic systems of contemporary good science, you will gain access to the taxonomy of mind-independent reality? Can you do that? What we need, it seems, is a way to accept the classificatory practices of modern science while maintaining that science can teach us about the structure of mind-independent reality. So how can we do that? I mean, scientific practice tells us that there is a plurality of taxonomies. How can we square that with a reality? What does that tell us about reality? According to Anya Chakravarti, it tells us that reality is plurally taxonomic. This is what it tells us. Now, I've already said that I don't think you can say that, but I mean, I don't think Chakravarti says it either. It just says it. But in the end, as you shall see, this is not what she actually claims. Okay. The first step to squaring these two desiderata is to make science informative again, that is, make identify what it is about our scientific theories, what they tell us about mind-independent reality, what do we see when we look through that window. And according to Chakravarti, the mind-independent content of scientific descriptions, if we look closer, is given by the properties used to describe the particulars involved. And I mean, it seems to me when I've been listening to the talks today that this is actually a view shared by most doing work in this field. Most, if by most, I mean Helen Beebe and stuff. So this is a quote. We learn that bodies with charge, in virtue of having this property, exhibit certain characteristic behaviors involving electromagnetic forces, in virtue of having the disposition to donate a proton, to accept or accept an electron pair. Acidic substances exhibit certain characteristic behaviors when brought into contact with alkaline substances. Now, notice that this description, like this quote, I mean, the natural kinds are playing a very, very minor part, even if they're playing any part in this description. But what we find are rather more fine-grained properties and functions and behaviors playing a role. And the claim now is that science is primarily concerned with picking out properties and property structures and not natural kinds and natural kind structures, or this is the most important part of science. Science teaches us which properties there are, not which natural kinds there are. So here's a new claim, new idea about what we will see when we look through the window, the scientific window to mind-independent reality. We will not see the unique natural kind taxonomy. We will see what properties there are. I would say we will see the unique mind-independent taxonomy of properties, but this is not the way Chakravarti would put things. So the first step here is to explain scientific practice, and this is how we do it. We say that properties can be conventionally grouped in different ways to form different categories of particulars. So how come that we have more than one taxonomic system when we look to the sciences? Well, it is because first we have the existential claims that we should now say characterizes scientific realism, namely that science tells us which properties there are, or in this case more precisely, mind-independent reality contains properties X, Y, Z, etc. And here they are in mind-independent reality. And so here's the window to mind-independent reality. And then, of course, when we look at these findings as more systematic scientists, we look at these and then we think about our scientific desiderata, different kinds of interests and other things that we have, and then we come up with the idea that, oh, these properties can be usefully classified in this way, and in this way, and in this way. So on this picture, which explains the scientific classificatory practices, the fact that there is the plurality of taxonomies in scientific practice is explained by the fact that when we classify in science, we are not looking at mind-independent reality. We are just looking at the list of existence that we glean from mind-independent reality in this first investigation, which is not concerned with classifying what exists in mind-independent reality in a more profound way. Now, this is precisely the picture that Anjan Chakravarti thinks is the same as giving up on scientific realism in a sense. It's not quite, because, of course, on this scientific realism, we do gain access to some of the existence of mind-independent reality, but Chakravarti seems to think that this basic fundamental, like this initial idea that science gives us information about how fundamental reality is structured, is also very important to the essence of scientific realism, basically. So the problem with this picture is that although it can explain scientific classificatory practices, it is not thick enough, metaphysically speaking, to qualify as a full-on scientific realism. So classificatory practices cannot only, is his idea, be explained with reference to conventions, scientific interests, and so on. And in fact, you could actually say that this picture could be construed as some kind of Ramseyanism, where you take scientific theories, you distill this Ramsey sentence, which tells us which properties there are, and that's it, basically. And here's a quote against going Ramsean. He says, arguably, any position is rendered nearly empty qua realism if it is compatible with the view that a scientific theory is true merely in virtue of there being some unobservables such that the observable consequences of the theory are true. I submit that if there is to be an account of taxonomic pluralism that is compatible with realism, it should yield more substantive knowledge of the unobservable. And as far as I understand him, what he means by this is that it's not a scientific realism unless it allows you to glean information about the taxonomic structure or structures of mind-independent reality, at least in some sense. Okay. So this is the account he does give. So he explains scientific practice, but then he wants to become more of a realist again. And so he adds more metaphysics. He says, though scientists are at liberty to call different groupings of properties kinds as best suits their various and different scientific needs, they are not at liberty to determine what groupings of properties there are in reality. Properties are not, as far as empirical investigation would appear to suggest, randomly distributed across space-time. Rather, they are systematically sociable. And quote, while scientists are certainly free to label different paths. Isn't that exactly what I... Yes, it is. Sorry. Okay, never mind. So here's a new picture. And in fact, I think there should still be an arrow here. There's one missing. We should still have that one as well. So the idea now is that we can glean quite a lot from science. We can see quite a lot through that window. And so first, we can see that mind-independent reality contains a number of properties. And second, we can see that given that mind-independent reality contains all these properties, it can be usefully classified in ways A, B, and C. And it can be usefully classified in ways A, B, and C because it is classified in ways A, B, and C. And Chakravarti adds, in numerous other ways. So think of all the ways that you could classify this sample of properties. All of those ways, all of those taxonomies exist in mind-independent reality. And when scientists, fueled by their scientific interests, classify the properties we glean from mind-independent reality when we conduct empirical experiments on it, all of those classifications that they come up with are not just there because they are useful to the scientist. They are there because they exist in mind-independent reality as well. Some of these we will discover as scientists because we care about them. Others will be completely uninteresting and therefore will never be discussed. Here's another quote. There is an important feature of what realists take to be mind-independent reality that is not captured by the notion that the dispositions, here is from, this is actually from his book, and here he speaks of dispositions instead of properties. But in the paper I'm mostly discussing, he has opted for talking about properties instead, and then he says that regarding these properties as a disposition is an extra metaphysical assumption that he believes you should make, but that you don't have to make. You can still be his kind of taxonomic pluralist. So he says, capture the notion that the dispositions conferred by causal properties account for the regular behaviors of things. Properties or property instances are not the sort of things that come randomly distributed across space-time. They are systematically sociable. They like each other's company. It's this fact that one captures with talk about natural kinds, and this feature of reality surely has a place in the ontology of scientific realism. Now, I'm not sure that this will work as a solution to the original problem. And this is why. So, the original problem was that if we are scientific realists and want to claim that science gives us access to the mind-independent structure of reality, and so that science is informative when it comes to the mind-independent structure of reality, Yet we want to allow for the fact that science actually gives us mutually incompatible taxonomic descriptions of this mind-independent reality. Then if we go Chakravarti's way and say that reality is basically constituted by properties, and I'll come back to that because I don't know where that information came from. I think it's also problematic, but suppose we accept that. So looking at our scientific theories, we learn that reality is constituted by these properties. And then, he says, using our scientific, like, fueled by our scientific needs, we then go on and form taxonomies of these properties based on our scientific needs. But those taxonomies are there because they are there in mind-independent reality, like a myriad of other taxonomies that we will not map out because we are not interested in them, then this is not... Then what happens is that rather than science informing us about the mind-independent structure or structures of reality, we are assuming that mind-independent reality has a myriad of structures, some of which will be picked up by science not for metaphysical or empirical reasons, but for reasons of scientific need. So this is not the same as saying that science is informing us about the taxonomic structure of reality. It's just assuming that, making a very, very bold metaphysical assumption about how reality is or isn't structured. And so let me try to explain this. So suppose that we say that the structures that we identify as scientists are identified on purely conventional grounds. So there is no need for any, you know, mind-independent reality playing any role in our formulation of these or identification of these structures. And suppose that mind-independent reality is constituted by properties and that these properties are sociable in precisely the way imagined by Chakravarti. Then this fact... This could be a fact, although the structures identified by science are nothing but conventional. Suppose that the structures are identified by science are identified on conventional grounds, but they are actually mirror the actual sociable structures of mind-independent reality. Well, then the same thing goes. And this is precisely why, as far as I can see, this suggestion cannot tell us how science can inform us about the structure of mind-independent reality. Because science, on this approach, cannot... there is no way for us to tell these two situations apart, other than by making a very basic and very substantial metaphysical assumption. That is not, which, I mean, I'm fine with that assumption, but it's not an assumption about what we can learn from science. It's an assumption about how mind-independent reality is, irrespective of science. Okay, so if the structures are conventional and so mind-dependent, then irrespective of whether properties are sociable or not, taxonomic pluralism is not a thesis about the structure of mind-independent reality. And if the structure is mind-independent because properties are inherently sociable, then even if we admit that our pragmatic interests may change and contradict one another, there's still just one unique structure underlying all classification. And this is the point I was making before about the blob idea about mind-independent reality. So are we back where we started? Now, given how science works, we've found, it cannot tell us about the natural kind structure of mind-independent reality because it tells us about the natural kind structures of mind-independent reality or of our conventional systems or whatever. This is just a fact. Even if science can tell us about what natural kind structures there are, this is arguably not the sort of information the metaphysician is after. So suppose that Anya Chakravarti is right and that when scientists, fueled by their scientific interests of different kinds, look at the properties provided by empirical investigation and then taxonomize them, like structure them in different ways, suppose that whenever they do so, the structure they come up with matches a structure in mind-independent reality, then this is not, this is my point, then even though this is the case, this is just coincidence. Because there's nothing about scientific practice that informs us that these are the structures of mind-independent reality. It's just a metaphysical assumption. And that's not what Chakravarti is after. So that's a problem. So I don't think the pluralism works, as he does. I don't think that on his account, science can tell us about what structure or structures mind-independent reality has. And I think we should buy that conclusion basically. Then again, according to Chakravarti, science is informative in the sense that science can tell us which properties there are. Now, this is the point where I have to think some more, but I very much suspect that, so his reasons for saying that looking at scientific descriptions, we find that what interests scientists and what they pick out are properties, is that he thinks that if, for instance, we understand what science picks out in terms of particulars and become nominalists instead, then particulars cannot be sociable in the sense in which Anjan Chakravarti wants them to be. But I think this is just a matter of not understanding basic metaphysics, because of course there are nominalist theories according to which basic particulars primitively resemble one another, which is a sort of sociability in the sense required here. So to me it's like, I think that you cannot even, by looking at scientific descriptions, say which ontological categories in the very basic sense of ontological categories, like mind-independent reality is constituted of. Like, is it constituted of concrete particulars, of properties, of facts, of whatever? Because, I mean, there may be some points where this is not true, but for the most parts, every ontological theory, if at least a little bit mature, is such that it's completely aware of all the explanatory tasks that set for it. This is true of nominalist theories as well as realist theories. So nominalists, of course, have accounts of, can metaphysically explain or account for necessity, sociability, if you like, structures, resemblance. I mean, most of the time people spend formulating these theories are spent exactly accounting for these things that are not immediately accounted for when you just look at the basic posits of the theory. Therefore, I mean that I think that Chakravarti is overstating his case both when it comes to which structures science can tell us about and when it comes to which kinds of things in the ontological sense of kinds of things reality is constituted by. So none of this, as far as I'm concerned, can be seen when we look through the window of science. But then, really, am I giving up on scientific realism? What can science justifiably inform us about concerning mind-independent reality? And now we're entering truly speculative ground. So let me go back to the quote provided by Anjan Chakravarti. And let me also remind you about some of the things that have been said this afternoon, where it seems to me like I'm not very good at science, so I'm just trusting people here, but it seems to me that if you can read almost every scientific description with different glasses. So you can read them with the natural kind glasses, and all you see are natural kinds all over the descriptions. You can read them with your more finer grained properties glasses, but I prefer to change glasses once again and read them with my behavioral roles glasses. So here's the quote again, but now with one part at least highlighted. We learn that bodies with charge, in virtue of having this property, exhibit certain characteristic behaviors involving electromagnetic forces. Having this, or later further down, so acidic substances exhibit certain characteristic behaviors when brought into contact with alkaline substances. So what we have here, of course, is a catalogue of functions, of behaviors, of ways of doing things, of role, of behaviors. And so my idea is that perhaps we can go this way instead, and avoid all the trouble so far. Because arguably, these kinds of roles or behaviors are not the kinds of things that occupy, that define the ontological category. So that would help us in the discussion between particulars and properties and so on. Because really, when you formulate an ontology, you ask yourself, these are all the things that it appears that things can do. So what can play these roles? Some roles are harder to play for particulars, like resembling. Then you have to have a longer story. Some parts are harder to play for blah, 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 and then you have to have a longer story. But this is what ontological discussions are all about most of the time, just accounting for all these roles that are supposed, that whatever there is fundamentally are supposed to be able to play alone or in different constellations and so on. So my idea is that science, as the most mature way of studying mind-independent reality, perhaps science can tell us not what natural kinds there are, not what properties there are, but what kinds of behavior there are. And in fact, I suspect that the taxonomy we would come up with would be a unique taxonomy that's not contradictory, because science will hardly reveal that one and the same thing can do contradictory things. So different behaviors may contradict each other, but behaviors will also come in different clusterings and so on. And then my idea is that this is what science can tell us. And that's enough, I think. And then I think that there is a role for deep metaphysics, because metaphysics now can furnish actors suitable to play those roles. Which actors can play those roles, as far as I can tell, is not an empirical question. It's a metaphysical or an a priori question. So what those roles are is a scientific, not a metaphysical question, and who can best play those roles is a metaphysical, not a scientific question. Did I have one more? No. So, yes, this is my idea.